Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, July 14th. I'm Ray Graff. Time to talk car maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's a repair, towing, and used car facility. If you have a question about how your car works, why it doesn't work, why that light's on, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Gordon is a popular guest, so get the call in early if you want a shot, 800-348-2551. 2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. The one, the only, Gordon Fricke and your automotive calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years, and it's always great to have him on the show. You have a question? Now's your chance. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org with a V. Some people write box pop, but it's just the way I say it. It's my fault. Voxpop, V-O-X-P-O-P at wamc.org for your emails, or 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, hot out there for you.
Well, you know, I left, and I kind of was conscious of the temperature. So I left the town of Hoosick. It was 83, and I got in the parking lot, and it was almost 90.
Yeah. Oh, that's all?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's not as horrendous as it was presented to be. Maybe it's the wildfire smoke filtering the sun out a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, could be.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a big event coming up on the 28th of this month. Are you excited?
You know, I heard about that. What are we going to do?
You and I are going to be chatting about cars with a group full of people at the Saratoga Automobile Museum, Tuesday, July 28th.
Fitting location.
And your cohort, Don, is going to be on the panel, and Philip Morris from Proctor's, who is a car collector, is going to be there as well. We're going to have a little fun. Have you ever been to this museum?
Yes, I have. Not a million times, but a handful.
I have not been yet, but I was looking at the website and looking at some of the... Oh, my gosh. This is going to be heavenly, because, you know... Me, man, I'm not a mechanic, but I watch car shows, and yeah. I watch some of these counting cars and some of these shows.
Sure. Yeah,
love it. Watched an auction over the weekend.
It's a great spot because there's a little bit of everything. You know, they have themes that go through there. You know, Porsche will pour cars through there, and you'll have a variety of cars. So it's not just geared to one particular group of car enthusiasts.
And so what we're going to do is record a Vox Pop there in front of a live audience. So if you have a car question and you want to ask Gordon directly, you can do that, and you can find out all you want about this event. It's July 28th. I know you've heard a zillion promos where I'm promoting this. And if you're sick of it, I apologize. We're going to try to work on the rotation a little bit. It can be a little much. Even my beautiful voice can be a little annoying at times.
Well, Don stopped in there. I saw Don the other day, and he said, hey, people are asking me about the 28th. I said, well, yeah, it's getting advertised a bit.
And is Don excited? Is he nervous?
Yes, he is. No, I think he's going to be excited and going to have a good time. It's, you know, this is a not a high-pressure event. We have so much fun here, and so we're going to be in front of live people instead of on the mics and headphones here.
To be clear, it's not a high-pressure event for you because you're not getting paid and never have. However, I'm still pulling a paycheck, so there's a little pressure on me, but it's going to be great.
So I got to behave.
Well, no.
On your behalf.
Remember, it's recorded, so if you drop the occasional, if you work the blue material, we'll cut it out for the air.
The first show you and I did, which was probably like 14 years ago, 13
Jeepers,
years ago.
Really? Yikes.
I walked in here stone cold, didn't know anybody, no prep, no anything.
Yeah.
And the only advice you gave me was, you know, whatever you do, just try not to drop the F-bomb on the radio.
Yeah, I tell that.
And I've done that. I haven't done that. Right, I followed your advice.
Well, we have a delay, and Emily Forster is on the board today, but she knows where the delay is too. So we can just hit the dump button if anything goes wrong.
Okay.
So that's if you want to find out about this, you want to join us, we're going to have a great time. Seats are limited. It's WAMC.org/on the road. And Peter Hughes, who produces these events, made a kind of an odd picture of me in racing gear from the 20s. It looks like I should be in the Wacky Racers. And, it's, you know, it gives them something to do.
Right.
The number on this program is 800-348-2551. If you have a car question for Gordon Fricke today as we warm up for the big live event. Some emails have come in. This one came in before the last show and got buried. Mm. And this is from Rebecca, who says, I'd like Gordon's advice on a check engine issue with my Subaru Impreza 2014 that has 160,000 miles. The check engine light comes on intermittently. Keeps doing it. We had a timing solenoid fixed at a local mechanic, but the issue has returned. When we brought it to our Subaru dealer, they diagnosed it as needing major timing system repairs and that there is oil leaking from the head gaskets. Recommend resealing the engine and replacing all timing chain components. The cost? Almost $8,000. Is there a way to fix this without that major repair? Maybe just replace the solenoids and keep up filling the oil and... You know, it's not losing that much. A repair of that cost doesn't seem like a good investment in this old high-mileage car. And that's from Rebecca in Monmouth, Maine.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the mileage is what scares me a little bit in putting that many thousands of dollars into the 14 car, I think you said it was. There are the timing codes. There can be a lot of timing codes. And if it's a P0016, that's a nasty one usually because that means the correlation between the crankshaft and the camshaft is too far apart, usually by stretched timing chain or worn guides or components.
Right.
Pretty substantial job on some cars, not a killer, but seems to me in that email there are some other components in question. And the head gaskets.
It's leaking oil.
It's leaking oil. And that was not the most uncommon thing with Subarus, although by 14 they weren't. They had most of the ills of the head gaskets solved. But if the car would have to be, in my view, very, very perfect and pristine otherwise to be sinking that kind of money in at this time.
Okay. So if the head gasket goes on that, and assuming you don't warp your engine, is it an expensive job compared to the North Star disaster on my old Cadillac?
No, it's not as bad as the North Star event. And what these cars generally did was they leaked oil from the head gaskets because the head gasket seals three things, combustion gases, coolant, and oil. And the oil is pumped up to the cylinder heads under pressure. So if it's leaking oil from the head gaskets or gasket, there's two on that car, that will never stop, and if it gets to be too much, you're going to have a big mess, and potentially you might run out of oil if you don't check it often enough.
Now, as I recall, when I had two 1999 DeVilles that had the same head gasket blow up over the years, and as I recall, when they were getting close to their death throes, I went to the auto parts place, and I think I got some stuff that was supposed to seal it. And I don't think it worked very well, honestly.
No, because I believe the North Stars, I believe that was a combustion issue,
which
the additives won't solve that. If it's a coolant leaking externally, the additives, the sealers can remedy that.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
All right, this is from Tom, came in early this morning. Check engine light. How long can we go with the check engine light on before fixing, for example, the O2 sensor? And that's from Tom in Gardner, Massachusetts.
Well, it depends on the code. So he apparently has an O2 code of some sort. And you can have several codes. One can be a heater code. The O2 sensors have heating elements in them that warm them up and get them working much faster than ordinarily. And on some of your rear sensors, they won't warm up, or actually some front sensors also, they won't stay warm enough at idle, and the sensor will go offline, turn the check engine light on. So heater codes, not harmful, can drive on them. When you get into slow response times or stuck rich, stuck lean, now you got a running problem. And
Okay.
I wouldn't let it go too long.
All right. One more email, and then we will take a break, and then we'll hit the phones, and we'll check the email bag a little later on. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Gordon Fricke, here is a two-parter from Jason. One, LEDs have revolutionized automobile lighting. I think it goes a bit too far sometimes, but there's one application I haven't seen, proportional brake lights. I'd like to know if the driver in front of me is just touching the brake pedal or slamming it on to avoid hitting the animal that just jumped in front of their car. The lights could tell me that by changing color, intensity, etc. What a brilliant idea that is.
So what he's saying is change the intensity or the amount of illumination by how hard you are on the brake pedal?
Yeah, if you slam the pressure, it gets brighter or changes tint.
Totally doable on an engineering level because most every car today has a brake pressure sensor, and it's telling the ABS computer how much pressure you're applying to the brake pedal. You could definitely turn that signal into an intensity situation on the brake light.
It's so cool. I mean, you couldn't change the color because that's a state law. I remember having one of my old taillights was out, and they pull you over. Hey, you know your taillight's out? No, I do now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But no, that is a kind of an interesting idea.
Yeah. Second part from Jason. Let's see if he's brilliant on the second one. Over many years, I've been greeted occasionally by a dead battery because I forgot to turn off a dome light or a car wasn't closed all the way when I exited the car. It would seem simple to add a circuit that would detect low voltage and disconnect the battery. An LED on the dashboard could signal that condition, and a button push would reconnect the battery with enough charge to start the engine.
So
this guy, he says 7-3, which is a salutation of a ham radio operator. Clearly, this guy is pretty with it.
10-4.
Yeah. No, that's CB.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's different.
Now we're off track.
Yeah. 10-4.
That
got us a convoy.
Yeah,
all right, fine.
Adam 12. So vehicles now do watch for stuff that has been turned on and times them out.
Yeah.
And in a perfect automotive world, the modules will go to sleep after, I think, 20 minutes, and they're supposed to power down and save the battery. Supposed to is the key word.
Right.
Because they don't always.
Yeah.
And there's also a lot of parasitic draws that are 24/7 on the battery to keep memories alive, the clock, the radio stations,
sure,
all that stuff.
Not to mention the anti-theft.
Exactly. The theft system, sure. And that's why batteries have gotten so much bigger in cars, because the demand and the loads are way bigger.
Yeah.
And most cars today will kill a battery after a certain period of time, regardless.
Jason has a PS. Ray, you've remarked on the pronunciation of schwangunk in the underwriting blurbs. Yes, I have, Jason. Well, Jason says, I've lived in New Paltz for 50 years. The correct pronunciation is schwangunk.
Excellent.
It's not spelled that way, Jason, and it's driving me crazy. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're going to take a break here, and we'll be back with Gordon Fricke. We'll get to your calls shortly. Say, have you heard that there's going to be a live event with Gordon Fricke and myself July 28th? Well, sure thing. And you probably heard my promos. If you want them to stop, we have to fill the room. Go to WAMC. It's not extortion, but it's sort of like it. WAMC.org/on the road. You can find out how you can join Gordon Fricke and friends and myself up at the Saratoga Automobile Museum on July 28th. All right, that's enough. I won't mention it again today. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. Let's go to the phones. Rob in Wappingers Falls. Rob.
How are you guys doing today?
Welcome.
Good.
Can you hear me all right?
You betcha. Go.
Oh, cool. All right. I got a 2016 Corolla Basic. It's got 56,000 miles, so I don't have a ton of miles. About a month ago, I heard a little ticking. The car was off in the garage, and from under the rear and the back, I got the key. I just turned the key on and off, and the ticking went away. And check engine light came on a couple of weeks later. A buddy of mine plugged it into the computer. The code was P0171, famous. And the RPMs are, you know, running. It's running like slightly higher instead of nice at 800. It's like running at about 1,000. It's a little surge in the RPMs. So I was wondering, am I correct? Is it a fuel pump? Am I correct? Maybe an O2 sensor? Do I know what I'm talking about? Maybe I need to move to Hoosick Falls as my car gets older.
So what was the code description? You said a friend plugged it in?
Yeah, P0171. I believe it's either a fuel pump or an O2 sensor. And do I need to go to the dealer to do that, or can I go to a local guy on the corner?
No, you can. I would start, if you have an independent shop or a shop that you have used and trusted, a lot of these emission repairs now are able to be solved at locations other than the dealer. Some stuff is hair pulling, requires software and deeper testing, and you reach parts of the troubleshooting tree or diagram that says, after you've done these 430 different steps, now try a known good part. Well, sometimes that's a really hard thing to come up with unless you go buy it and chance it. But I don't know if the ticking in the back has any correlation to that. You had the car off and the car was shut down, basically, right? And you heard a ticking?
Correct.
And did that just do it that one occasion?
Twice.
And how long did it tick for? Like 20 minutes or just within the 5 minutes after you shut the car off?
Oh, it was hours later. I walked into the garage to, you know, do some I'm a big recycler, so I like to make sure. And then I heard the ticking.
Oh, okay. Oh, so car powered off, hours later, ticking. The only thing that's going on in the back, well, there's a number of things, but there is a unit in the back called the charcoal canister, the vapor canister, and there's a solenoid on there, canister vent valve, that the computer operates. And it's possible that the computer was inadvertently cycling that solenoid in the back, but you'd be getting more codes than the 171. The fuel pump, if it's being energized inadvertently by the computer, that's a module issue. So I guess the thing to do would be to start with your regular shop and see how they go with it. It may be something, and a lot of shops have data services that, you know, you can present them with a problem, or they'll have a database that says, yeah, when we get this code on this car, 70% of the time we find this, 40% of the time we find that. And it's even available on the scan tools to help you narrow down the problem. But that's where I would start.
So right. Then we can't really know a price just yet.
No, not even close.
Good luck, man.
Yeah, the diagnosis process has to get started first.
Rob, thanks for the call. It's Cars with Gordon Fricke. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And by the way, Ronan, speaking of information, Ronan wrote in, earlier, Jason wrote in about adaptive brake lights. With my useless knowledge, I'm pleased to inform you guys that the E60 generation of BMW 5 Series, 2004 to 2010, had adaptive brake lights. It had a second bulb that would light up when harshly braking.
That's excellent.
Yeah, but it's good except that nobody knew about it. And then you don't know why. It's brighter now.
And people might say, oh, the guy's got brake light problems.
Yeah. And you get pulled over, and then you know what happens,
exactly.
Right? The number here is, and by the way, I've heard from several people who say, no, it's not Shongum. It's Shawangunk. I don't know. It's just as confusing now as it was then.
You're going to need to get an outside source to come in and help you on that.
All right. Well, I just go with what the phonetics are in the underwriting. I mean, I don't want to irritate the underwriters. You know what I mean? All right, let's go to Pittsfield. David, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon.
Howdy.
Can you hear me?
Sure. Go right ahead.
I got a 1968 Pontiac Catalina convertible, and I've been having an issue with the blinkers in the back. the old style sockets have a metal.
We lost you for a second there.
And then you twist them. That's what grounds it.
Okay, we lost that. It had a I think you were saying metal, but that we lost you. So say it again, the last part of that.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, the blinker sockets have a metal shroud on them.
Uh-huh.
So when you push them in and you turn them, that's what makes the ground.
Uh-huh.
Well, the new style only have two wires. The old style has one. And I'm trying to figure out how, because I tried self-grounding those, and it just won't work.
Hmm. Gordon.
So you have a new socket to replace the old one with, and it has two wires?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, the new one has two wires. The old one has one wire because the metal shrouds,
right.
You know, when you put it in and you turn them so
yep.
they don't fall out.
Yep.
That's what grounded them.
So if you took the negative side of your new socket,
yep.
which is the thing that surrounds the bulb still, so what do you have for a bulb? A single filament bulb? 1156?
Yes. Yeah, 1156,
okay.
1157.
So 1157 is two filaments, 1156 is one. But you
right.
could then just take that second wire that the socket is providing as a ground and connect it to the other, where all the other bulbs are getting their ground. Just find a place to loop that wire.
Genius.
To provide that new socket with a ground the old way, if you follow what I'm saying.
My understanding is with the old style, when you put the blinker on, it sends a signal to the blinker, and then the blinker sends a signal back. And that's where I think the issue is, because you turn it on and you get nothing. I've tried self-grounding, you know, like the two wires, one's power, the other's ground. I tried grounding it to the car, and it doesn't work. And I tried grounding it to where the other lights are.
So if you take it, you have a 12-volt test light?
Yes.
Okay, so take your test light, ground it, turn on your directional, and then put the point of the test light in the center where the bulb would make contact. Tell me if you're, and see if your test light flashes, because you're going to substitute your brake light bulb with the test light.
Ah.
If it does
not
do that, you've got a positive input problem that comes through the vehicle's wiring out of the flash unit. Flash unit is very basic on those cars. All it's doing is interrupting the signal. It's just
exactly. That's what I thought.
Yeah, there's nothing feeding back to that flasher. It's a dumb flasher. There's nothing electronic about it.
There's nothing dumb about a 68 Catalina.
No, that's
there's
right.
There's nothing dumb about that car.
That's true.
That's right.
He's
up Ray's alley.
Yeah, my folks had a 67, Bonneville, Safari wagon when
nice.
I was a kid. Oh, that's
did
a
you relic. Sit? Did you sit backwards and face rearward
we
in that car?
We sure did.
Yeah.
We weren't tethered down at all.
No.
We'd drive down a Long Island and be hanging out in the back.
Just like rag dolls.
Yeah, buddy. All right, go ahead, David, real quick.
I found the wiring harness from Classic Industries.
Yep.
And it's not that expensive. And I was thinking about just replacing the whole thing, you know, the brakes, the blinkers, because the brakes are one, blinkers the next one.
Yes, and I tell you.
But I'll try that with the light.
Well, that will just confirm that you've got the proper signal coming back to that socket. If you don't, you got to move forward now, which could be a harness issue. A car that old, it's very, very common to have wire failures in the harness somewhere. And because it's a car that there's a lot of stuff available, it might be wise to replace that harness if you find there's no signal there.
All right, David, we got to let it go, but thank you and good luck. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Tom is in Albany. Hello, Tom in Albany.
Hi. How you guys doing?
Pretty well.
Good,
how are you?
Good.
Good.
Good, thank you. And I have a 2013 Ford Mustang, about 70,000 miles. I typically don't drive it in the winter. I don't drive it in the winter, I should say. I have a problem that is not repetitive and cannot be linked. I can't link it to rain or time or anything. But every so often, the car will turn the key and all the light dash lights go on, and I turn it off. I try it because I'm frustrated at the time. I'll try it 3 or 4 times, and then I'll quit. And if I wait an hour to two and go out and turn the key, the car will start.
Huh.
Otherwise, the car will not start. The key just turns, and all the dash lights, including engine light, all seat belt, hinge, anything, all dash lights just go on.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I try. I was thinking of taking it to the dealer. Of course, I can't because I can't get it to repeat. So if I took it to the dealer, nothing would happen. That type of thing.
So
that's my problem.
So what you've got is an intermittent no crank. You know, you turn the key to the cranking position and nothing happens, and then it'll crank sometime later.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So the easiest thing, I shouldn't say easiest, because if the problem can't be produced, it's very hard to determine what it is. But let's say I tow a car in with a no crank. I usually just get to the starter, put a test light on the solenoid, have somebody turn the key as if they're trying to crank it, see if you get a test light illuminating, because you just checked everything from the ignition to the starter in minutes. If you have a signal there and the car won't crank, you could have a faulty starter or a bad connection somewhere between the battery and the starter and the solenoid. But I think in that case, somebody's going to need to get to the starter to check for a good or bad connection there. And it could be that simple. It could just be an issue with the solenoid connector. And I know the car is never driven in the winter, so corrosion is probably not a big issue, but that's what you might end up with. Or you could have an intermittent starter, but wants to
How
be
about
diagnosed.
The fact that all the dash lights go on when I turn the key, when it doesn't start.
Well, you've energized all that stuff, and the engine's not running. So the computer is, you know, all your warning lights are coming on. And again, if you put the key to crank and there's no signal out at the starter, then there's a problem upstream, and that takes you to a bunch of things like the ignition switch. Is it a manual shift car?
No, it's
okay.
Automatic.
Yeah, so there's the computer's looking for being in park or neutral. That just now turns into more diagnostic work. But
all right. Well, we got to let you go there, Tom, and good luck with that one. Let's go quickly before the next break up to Mickey in Queensbury. Mickey, you're on.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I got a 2018 Ford F-150, about 68,000 miles on it. If I'm cruising along an open road, there's a little dip in the road. The car naturally kind of accelerates going down the dip. If I don't put my foot on the gas to kind of push myself out of the dip and I hold the pedal, as I'm coming up out of the dip, I feel this little hesitation. It's kind of subtle, but it happens pretty frequently enough so, you know, I'd like to have it looked at. I had a scan done quite a long time ago. They suggested doing a fuel injection cleaner. And I went through, I think, about 3 gas tank fulls at 36 gallons. So, and it didn't go away. So I'm wondering if you have any other ideas.
So the scan didn't turn up any codes is what you're saying. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, yeah.
Yep.
Well, there's a lot of things that can create a mild shudder. 60,000 miles. How many speed transmission do you have? Do you know? Is it 8 or 10?
I think it's 10.
10 speed. There were some trouble with those 10 speeds. I don't want to scare you.
Oh, boy.
I don't want to scare you into a
That's
transmission.
That's not good.
But no, the 10 speeds were, they had a lot of problems.
What happened?
Well,
what was wrong?
Design issue, and the 10 speeds had a weird shifting strategy. They would skip gears if they didn't need to. It was great to have 10 speeds, but you didn't really need them. And
in an F-150, I don't know why you would.
But have you ever had the transmission fluid serviced on that truck?
No.
So, nope. And you're at 60,000, you said?
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, I think they recommended some wild number, like close to 100. But
well,
no, I haven't ever had it serviced.
Well, I guess what I'm leading up to is you may have a transmission shutter due to tired fluid, and a fluid change might remedy it, but a lot of dealers are very reluctant to flush those transmissions beyond a certain mileage, and they make you sign a release because they fail so often.
How about that?
But I would talk to probably maybe a Ford dealer or a transmission shop that's got experience in these so you feel you're doing the right thing, because you can, if you flush the fluid too late in the vehicle's life, or if a sample of the fluid is removed and it's very horribly dirty, some shops would be afraid to do anything with it. And I'm not even saying you've got a transmission shutter, but it sounds like it possibly could be. You're too young for too few miles for spark plugs, but again, a phantom plug could be cropping up.
Had that problem myself in the old days.
And these plugs last so long now that people say, well, geez, you don't have 100,000 on it yet. I would look at your maintenance manual and see what they tell you about transmission fluid under severe duty and what they tell you about spark plugs under severe duty.
All right, Mickey, we got to take a break here. It's 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Now some karaoke Beatles. Oh, you should have heard Gordon Fricke doing the karaoke version of She's Leaving Home. It was, it wasn't that good, actually. Gordon Fricke's our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the number. A couple emails here, Gordon, and then we'll go back to the phones for the home stretch. Larry in Poughkeepsie writes, manual transmission oil change? I have a 2019 VW Golf Sport Wagon with 4Motion Haldex all-wheel drive with the rare 6-speed manual transmission. I'm at 211,000 miles I've had since new. VW claims the manual gearbox oil is lifetime, as does a reputed local shop, and they refuse to change the oil. And the independent even claims there's a risk in changing it. I think that's nuts. I'll change it myself if I have to. What's your thoughts on that?
So no risk on a manual transmission. The risk is in the automatics.
Okay.
And it kind of is lifetime fluid in the sense that a manual transmission or a gearbox is not experiencing clutch wear, combustion, gases, soot, all the stuff that happens from an engine running and or an automatic transmission shifting, using up clutch material. So, and there's a big magnet on the drain plug that will catch any debris that might be floating around in there. However, some car manufacturers, when manuals were still quite popular, Subaru in particular, had an interval for change.
Oh.
They recommended the manual be changed and the differentials front and rear be changed at certain intervals. So you could change that gear oil in that car. Just make sure you're buying the exact correct fluid specced out to the gearbox.
Why do you think that both the dealer and a reputable local shop that knows this stuff both say don't do it?
The dealer is probably just going by the factory guidelines that are saying this is no change fluid.
Right.
And there are so few manuals out there now.
Oh, 6-speed manual?
Yeah.
Thank you. That sounds great.
But to my knowledge, because it's a manual gearbox, there are no clutches or electronics in that. Unless, and I know he said that it was an all-wheel drive vehicle, but I don't believe there's any differential in there.
Okay.
But yeah, it would be wise to get the strategy behind why they're saying no.
Okay, so
you know?
A little more research.
Yeah.
All right, this one's from a cleric, so I want you to give a good answer. Maybe you put in a good word for you at the right time. Father Tony writes in, I have a 2014 Highlander. Recently, it has been sluggish when I accelerate. Yesterday on the Northway, as I went to pass another car, all of a sudden the engine light came on and the dashboard had a message that said T-rack or track offline, or the all-wheel drive was not working. I pulled over, turned off the car, waited a few minutes, and then started it again. The message was gone, the engine light off, but it was still sluggish. I use premium gas. I add to it once in a while, gas additives. Any recommendations? That's from Father Tony.
Yeah. Should get scanned, because if too much time passes, that code will be erased if the computer has rechecked the system enough times and feels that nothing is there. If the sluggishness is there, though, constantly, it could be a misfire occurred when he jumped on it hard to pass that car.
Yeah.
And the computer, the engine control module, flags it, turns on the check engine light, and then it tells the ABS module, we may have some engine concerns. Don't go crazy with the traction control or the ABS brakes. So that was a secondary. Those were secondary codes, like sympathetic pain.
Yeah.
you smash your thumb and your index finger hurts, right? Yeah. It hurts for your thumb.
Now we're in a different realm altogether. All right.
I would get it scanned, because the root of the check engine light is the cause of the traction light and the other stuff coming on.
Okay. Two more quick emails, and then we got to jump back to the phones. Frank writes in, I was recently at a mechanic to have my tires looked at. He said they weren't too bad yet, but they were starting to become chopped. Can you please explain what the mechanic was trying to say? What does it mean when tires become chopped, and what causes it?
Yeah, well, the tread blocks aren't wearing flat anymore. So if you were to raise the vehicle up and roll the tires and look at them or put your hand on them, you would feel all this roughness, you know, like a blah, 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 blah. And as everybody probably knows, as tires wear, they get noisier and noisier and noisier. You put a new set of tires on, you say, the car's quiet again. Where did all the noise go?
Yeah.
That was because of the choppiness of the tread wear that sometimes is unavoidable. Some tires do it way worse than others. But you could also have an alignment concern causing the tire to wear that way.
Okay. This is from Carmine, and then we're going to go back to the phones. Gordon Fricke's our guest. It's Cars Today. Carmine writes in, I have a 2020 Honda Civic LX, purchased new, almost 340,000 miles on it.
Nice.
Replaced front struts, CV joints, alternator, battery, brakes, tires as needed, oil changes as needed. No other maintenance on it. Burns no oil. What a great car. No other fluid changes, all driving in the capital region. Wait a minute, Carmine, there's no question there. Well, Carmine's bragging a little bit about 340,000 miles.
That is fantastic service, though, because there's a lot of vehicles that won't do that today. And part of it is planned obsolescence.
Right.
Stuff doesn't
I've never seen a car go 340,000 miles before. What's the longest, what's the most mileage ever on a vehicle?
Oh, I'm sure you could start getting calls or comments about some Volvo, older Volvos. They were trying to hit, you know, a million miles.
Yeah.
Toyotas are putting, heard of, you know, 500,000.
Okay, well, do me a favor. If you're listening and you want to call in and let us know, do it next time, because we'll never get through the calls we have now. We got several, and we're going to go as fast as we can. We'll start in Palatine Bridge. Alan, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Gordon. Hey, I've got a 2015 Nissan Altima. This is an air conditioning question. It blows cold going down the road, but when you get to like a stoplight where you slow down a little bit on a hot day, especially, it tends to get warmer in the car. And I was wondering, I've seen on some YouTube videos where people are rinsing out the condenser up by the radiator. And I'm wondering if you've ever seen that technique used. I've heard that it kind of gets clogged and air doesn't flow through there.
Yeah.
I've had the AC charged. I don't have a leak. I just went to the dealer. They said I have no leak. And I'm just wondering what your insights might be.
Yeah, that's a very, very good suggestion, which gets very, very often overlooked, is debris in the fins of the condenser.
Oh.
And yes, washing those out will more than likely benefit or solve your problem. The other concern that I run into is if the auxiliary fan is, and you may have more than one cooling fan on that car. Some cars have two. One is the primary fan to cool the engine. The second one comes on to for air conditioning use in super hot weather. If the AC condenser fan fails and you don't know it, when you slow down, you're not getting enough air past that condenser, and you will run into a petering out air conditioning system, get back up to highway speed, 50, 60, 90, 100, whatever. Now you got plenty of airflow and your AC is working great again. So try that. You're on the right track.
Alan, thanks a lot. Now to Chatham, New York. And Jeff, you're on. East Chatham. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Okay, I just have this question. I bought a Toyota Cross, and about 2 weeks after I bought it, it was a recall. It's been at the dealership for between 4 and 5 months. What are my options to, and I'm still paying for the car.
All right. Don't say the name of the dealership, all right, Jeff?
I would like to drive the car I bought.
All right.
What is the?
I'm going to hang up now.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. That's an interesting question.
I can hear you better on the radio than my phone.
Can I get?
Okay?
Can you tell me what the subject of the recall is?
Yeah, there was a bolt in the engine.
A bolt in the engine.
If it gets loose, the car goes on fire.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a pretty good reason.
That's what I was looking for, the severity of the recall, and that tells me that it could be a recall that's a stop operation recall, and I have a feeling that the remedy or the parts to fix that are in very short supply. But because it is a safety concern, a danger, the NHTSA is saying those vehicles cannot be operated.
You know, that's a great point, though. He's paying now on this, and he's not driving it
Correct.
For 5 months. Somebody's getting, getting the short end of the stick here.
Yes. In this case, if you're not getting any satisfaction from the dealer, call the manufacturer. In this case, it's Toyota. Call their customer service number. Have the vehicle ID number available. Plea your case and say, you know,
give me a new car.
Well, just a substitute transportation.
Yeah. Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Paul in Albany. Paul, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Yes, a 2010 Toyota Yaris. Bought it at 129. It's got 185 now. Last couple of months, the fan belt started slipping when it was cold. And I figured the fan belt was probably not new when I bought it, so it's probably more than, 55,000 miles. So I thought, what the hell, if it's starting to slip now, it's probably glazed, so I should just replace the belt. Well, the replacement belt slipped right away. I thought, well, okay, they must not have had the right tension on it, which also brings up the question of, I thought there were self-adjusting tensioners, automatic belt tensioners, but aside from that, I brought it back in, and they said, adjusted it. Well, maybe we have it too tight. Well, it was still slipping. Well, maybe we have it too loose. Well, adjusted it again, still slipping. Most of the time when I start, and also it'll kick in if I turn the AC on occasionally. So, but most of the time when I start, it slips now. So is that can they possibly not have adjusted it properly? Like, why is that?
Okay.
I have a hard time finding the sweet spot. Or is there something wrong with the belt? Or is there some other place to look? I'm kind of mystified.
Gotcha. Right. Gordon.
Right. So is that then, in fact, a non-self-adjusting system? Because you're saying they're making adjustments.
I guess not, if they were adjusting it themselves. I thought
right.
most cars had self-adjusting systems. I thought that was across the board, but I'm just assuming, I guess.
They do, but for a while, some lower-cost vehicles did use manual adjustments. If it's self-adjusting, the tensioner is always in question, but I'm sure your shop had been through this already by now, but the auto tensioner needs to be carefully checked to make sure it's providing the right tension. It's spring loaded. And then the other thing is alignment of the pulleys and maybe trying to use a different brand of belt. Try a factory belt
okay.
or a different brand.
All
other
right.
than
okay.
that, other,
yeah, I'm wondering if it...
Go ahead.
Other than that, it's basic stuff. You know, proper tension, correct belt, is the belt the correct length? Or did it go a number higher and somebody made a mistake in ordering it?
All right, Paul, thanks a lot. Good luck with that one. Mark is in East Moncton, Vermont. Hello, Mark.
Yes, my wife has a 2021 Kia Niro. It's a hybrid, 75,000 miles, been dealer service, and she's over in Barrie, Vermont, and several times, about three, she said, the car, as you go up the hill, it'll kind of shudder, and then it catches, and it only takes, you know, 2 seconds, 3 seconds maybe. And she came back over home, and we were on a hill, not that steep, just kind of, she was rolling, you know, waiting for the right of way, and as the car slowed down, then it did that again. I said, what the heck is that? And she said, it's done it three times, so I'm just trying to figure out. The dealer's going to look at it Friday.
Sure.
But their whole question was like, well, you know, we might not be able to diagnose it. I don't know what the hell. But anyhow, go ahead.
Yeah, right. They're concerned that they can't reproduce the problem, which is the most frustrating part on, on an intermittent situation. But is this happening when the gas engine is running? I mean, I don't know how far this goes in battery mode only. Maybe very little or none. But if it's a
there's a sport mode too, and some people on the internet just put it in sport mode. But I didn't know if there was something like fluid or whatnot.
Yeah, you can change the mode and put it in sport and see if the problem either goes away or changes. But a scan of the system, both hybrid and engine, might reveal some codes that will not turn on the check engine light. So I don't have any insight to that other than hopefully being able to reproduce the problem when it gets to the dealer, maybe go for a ride with the personnel and hope it does it, say that's it right there.
Yep.
Hey,
Mark, your connection is dropping in and out, buddy. I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there, but it sounds pretty stuttery. Sounds like a transmission stuttering.
It sounds like maybe what's happening to the car.
Exactly. All right. All right. We don't have time. Do we have time for one more? Brian in Westerlo, make it very quick, my friend.
Sure. I have a 2007 Toyota Sienna.
Oh, boy.
And there's a boot on either side that goes from the tie rod on up to the rack and pinion. And it's torn on both sides. And I'm just trying to figure out what the potential long-term damage could be if I don't address it, and whether it's worth fixing it, since I'll probably have to get an alignment done.
Okay, very quickly,
Gordon. Okay, so you cut out a little bit, but it sounds like it's the protective boot that covers up the tie rod. Is that correct?
That covers up the inner tie rod.
Yes,
yep.
Definitely get that fixed, because water, debris, dirt, and in the wintertime, salt will go in there, and it can ruin your steering rack and your inner tie rod end joint. So definitely
yes,
fix that.
And it's not fun when those things go. No. I can tell you from experience. Very quickly, and we're almost done. Susie in Aiken, South Carolina. My tire light keeps coming on and off. I check the pressure. Everything's fine. Can those sensors alert me to other problems with the wheels on a 2013 Subaru Outback?
They're measuring pressure and temperature, and that's basically it. So if the light is coming on, and it's coming on for the right reason, you have a tire going soft. If it's flashing the light coming on, there could be a sensor failing. Needs to be tested, but not that hard to do today.
But do you need to test it? I mean, the sensor. Who needs a sensor? We knew when the tires were low back in the day.
They didn't have them in 1965.
Yes, yes, indeed. All right, Gordon Fricke, the next time I see you will be July 28th. Is there another show?
This must be the lead up to the 28th Saratoga Auto Museum event.
Do me a favor, show up, will you? Because I can't answer a lot of car questions.
How should I dress?
Oh, just
a garage suit?
You should wear like ZZ Top, wear the one-piece overalls.
Oh, I've got those. I hope it's not too hot that day.
Oh, I'm sure they have air conditioning. All right, buddy. Well, we'll see you then.
Right.
Support comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, working to help people conserve farmland and forests in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve working land for good forever. agstewardship.org. The Tang Teaching Museum at Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. And Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, presenting Where the Holocaust Came to America, July 26th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., sjca.sjcf@gmail.com for registration. Thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the questions. I'm so sorry if you didn't get it in. You can always go to Saratoga and ask your question in person. Thanks to our engineer, Emily Forster. Owen O'Leary screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Let's talk stamps and coins. We'll do that tomorrow with Bob Scott and David Tripp. We'll see you 2:00.